We are live.
We are here. We're back. Sixers basketball.
Catch the fever. Is that the phrase this year? Catch the fever.
Oh, yes, man. In that it's very like contagious and possibly fatal.
So CJ is on some camping trip.
Fucking once a week, this guy does that.
I know. Said he's off the grid.
They voted me most likely to survive, so I have to do it every friggin' twice a month.
And honestly, like, he's, you know, like, what are we doing here? It's not like he's really surviving or something. Like, I'm sure they have all sorts of technology and stuff there. I'm sure they have fucking cell phones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They have to.
Yeah, come on.
They simply have to. I mean, if we were all getting like poisoned by 5G, you would think we would all have better reception. Like, CJ should have reception if that was the case.
Yeah. He should be, even if he's in the woods, he should be producing this podcast.
I think that that's right.
Fuck. I'm going to dock his pay. Old bitch. CJ. SoFi looks beautiful on TV.
Stadium. Oh, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I mean, I like Lincoln Financial Field, but man, looking at the Cowboy Stadium and SoFi is like, we could get a cooler one.
Yeah.
Does anyone have a couple billion dollars?
It wasn't that good as a setting for the Beyonce concert I went to.
Yeah.
But
I think all stadiums
suck
for concerts, to be honest with you. It's just too big.
This is great, though. It was beautiful. We had great seats. Not even like good seats, but just like great view.
Yeah.
We're in like 300 level corner of the end zone. That was great. That was lovely. And it was fucking loud, man. There were
a lot of Eagles fans.
A lot of Eagles fans. They kept having to raise the volume of their like little, you know, mid like commercial break games or chants or something, because
the Eagles fans were too loud.
They were moving pretty rowdy. It was good. It was fun. It was fun, man. So many Go Birds. I gave out a shocking amount of Go Birds.
Here we go. We're ready? We're ready. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers. For Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners, go and get engaged. Mortgage CS. Become a Mortgage CS Ricky VIP by going to mortgagecs.com/Ricky. Briggs Auction, the official auction of the process at briggsauction.com. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with code Dave Silver. The 2023 season begins. Just like the 2022-23 season ended, that is, with a loss to the Boston Celtics. The preseason has begun. Here we are. Now, James Harden, Joel Embiid did not play, along with DeAnthony Melton, and who am I forgetting else?
Korkmaz.
Korkmaz didn't play, but everybody else did. So we will talk about that. The Harden trade rumors have resurfaced as he shows up at camp. I break a promise I made to you and thousands of others. Also, if we get to it, some great response to the sex email, Citizens Bank Park versus the Wells Fargo Center, and are we overrating the Celtics and the Bucks? We will be live. Well, we do all the podcasts live now, pretty much all the podcasts live. So when we're doing the night of games, we will be live right here on YouTube and Twitch. Please subscribe to YouTube and Twitch. We are so close to 12,000 subscribers on YouTube. Would love to get there. Kinetic Skateboarding, who I love. It's chilly out here in the Northeast right now. I'm wearing a hoodie. It is hoodie season. A great place to stock up on new hoodies, new sneakers for the fall is Kinetic Skateboarding. You're going to find stuff there that you're not going to find anywhere else. And if you're a sneaker person, you're going to find sneakers there you're not going to find anywhere else. Vans, Nikes, Converse, all that kind of stuff. Go to kineticskateboarding.com and use code Dave Silver for 9.1% off your first order. We are on the home stretch trying to hit our goal for Bark in the Park. It is the Providence Animal Center 5K. We always have a team. We have raised $8,429. Our goal is $15,000. We have less than 2 weeks to get there. The link we will put in the description of this pod. If you could find it in your heart to donate anything, would really appreciate it. It's been a very tough year for animal shelters. In the first year during COVID, there were a lot of adoptions, and a lot of those adoptions have come back in the forms of returns of strays, and it's very difficult on the shelter. So anything you can donate would be fantastic. The Philly Music Fest is October 11th at World Cafe Live. Our friends at Marion Hill are headlining, along with Saturn Trap Rabbit, Ryan Gilfillian, who I think is a Ricky listener, which is pretty rad because he's awesome, Julia Pratt and Sophie Curran. You can get tickets at the link in the description of this pod, and revenue from ticket sales go to support Philadelphia music educators, which is awesome. They did a remix of Amos and the Chefs. We were right. Here it is. Let's go.
We were right, y'all, we were right. Even when it went wrong, we were right. We were right, y'all, we were right. So say the name. We were right, y'all, we were right. Even when it went wrong, we were right. We were right, y'all, we were right. So say the name. So say the name. So say.
Welcome to the Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who is really fired up and ready for another full preseason, regular season, and playoffs of Sixers basketball. That is one Mike Levin.
1,000 games in 6 months starts now.
I was watching the game, and midway through the second quarter, I was like, oh no. This is happening again. This game is so long. I can't believe there's going to be preseason games and regular season games, and here we go. But there were some nice little nuggets in this preseason game. Joel Embiid doesn't play. James Harden doesn't play. We will get to James Harden in a moment. De'Anthony Melton doesn't play. Furkan Korkmaz, who supposedly is suffering from some leg pain or something, but is really just the other guy who's waiting on a trade.
His leg hurts from tapping his foot so hard, waiting for the trade request to finally be completed.
So the starting five tonight was a loaded full of dogs. Starting five of PJ Tucker, Tobias Harris, B-Ball Paul, Pat Beverly, and Tyrese Maxey. I don't want to bury the lead here. The lead of this game is that Jaden Springer looked great. He looked great. He looked great in every respect. He looked quicker than he had previously, I would say. He looked confident and pretty skilled with the ball in his hands. Just a couple of quick dribble drives. The thing that you want from like the, you know, the 3-and-D type players is, can you dribble the ball three times without dribbling it off your foot? You know, the thing we always wanted Covington to be able to do. He hit a couple of spot-up threes, one at the top of the key, one in the corner. Sweet little dunk. And the signature moment for Jaden Springer in this preseason game was the block, incredibly clean block on Jason Tatum. As Jason Tatum tried to obliterate him, he got up, got his hand to the ball, and just like pushed it down like Tatum was a child. It's a great game from Jaden Springer. I'm giving it up here. This is me saying the story of this game to me was Jaden Springer.
Anything you want to say to me personally about it?
Oh, come on. You still haven't apologized for being wrong about Ben Simmons. I'm not saying anything to you.
Well, we've talked about this. Ben got significantly worse.
Well, but that's part of it. Wait a minute, hold on. If Jaden Springer is going to get better and you're going to do a victory lap, then Ben Simmons getting worse.
But that was an unforeseen, crazy situation.
It was
not replicable in the history of the league.
Okay, I will say. Well, we're trying. If any franchise could replicable it, all right, fine. I make fun of you every time you say a player's going to be good and they're not good.
Yeah, because it's easy to say they're not going to be good, Spike. Because usually most guys aren't good.
Well, then it's easy to say they're all going to be good, but...
But I don't say all of them are going to be good. I don't say all of them are good. I don't think... I'm not a Ricky Council guy.
This guy...
Even though, like, for the branding of this podcast, it'd be great if I was a Ricky Council guy. I just don't think I am.
Jaden Springer looked great. Jaden Springer looked playable. I would say this. Jaden Springer looked like he can play in an NBA game. 100%. And in the previous couple of years, he did not look like he could play in an NBA game.
100%. I mean, he is sort of, you know, I was at the Eagles game. I missed the first half, caught up on it. He just finds ways to contribute. I really loved the cut off of, I forget whose drive. I think it was Maxey. Maxey drive. Springer cuts off it down the middle, gets a big two-handed dunk out of it. Also, I was probably screaming at the Eagles game. That's why my voice is weird. If I can't tell if it's weird or not, but it
sounds fine.
Okay. But just like rose up for three a couple times, like didn't hesitate. He's still going to like attack a closeout if he can, but that's the most important stuff, man. The defense plays. The defense absolutely plays. And we just haven't seen the thing about like summer league and, you know, these late end of game preseason games is that you're playing with other guys that aren't very good. And giving Jaden Springer, who will be a role player in the NBA, a chance to play alongside other good players will make him feel like he have to do less and just sort of stick to what he can do. And tonight was great. I love the block. That was sick. The fact that it was on Tatum was huge. Hit a couple shots, made a couple little driving kicks, a nice little leave for, I think it was Petrushev. Just a really nice, complete, I'm an NBA player game, and there's no reason why he should not fight for the 9th or 10th roster spot, or spot in the rotation.
Rotation spot, yeah. Yeah, obviously it's one preseason game, but that said, it is the first game in which I believe that the whole of his presence looked like an NBA player, and he hadn't looked like one before. So I think that is the biggest thing that I saw. So, and okay, obviously this is one preseason game, obviously. So
sample
please,
size of one. That's all we got.
Yeah.
This everything is what that we happened got in the past doesn't exist. Delete all the podcasts, delete all the seasons. We are contextless going into this season.
Okay. Tyrese Maxey. Here's the only thing. Scored, I think, you know, like 13 in the first quarter. I think he had 19 in the first half. Hitting threes, yada, yada, yada. The one thing I did not see, and I don't know how many assists he had. I think he probably had one or two.
Maxey?
Yeah.
He had four.
Okay. He's not a point guard. He's just not a point guard. Off of any action when he's the ball handler on pick and roll action, or but he's just never, he doesn't really have that vision or feel. And it's almost like when he does do it, it's almost like a quarterback staring down his receiver on a play. Like, you know, he's going to do it. I just think whoever, assuming it's not Harden, whoever is going to play with him in that backcourt just needs to have some real point guard skills, because it's one preseason game, but I've won preseason game plus the rest of his career, and I just didn't see anything differently. He's not playing with Embiid, sure, but you got to play with the guys that you're playing with, and I just did not see that tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree on the level of that, like, he has to work through this stuff. Like, it is not, I don't care if he, you know, he had four assists and no turnovers. So that's obviously solid, just as the mm-hmm. as far as like statistically goes. But like, I've seen him make passes. I'd love to see him make lob passes. I'd love the Sixers to have a guy that can be on the receiving end of those lobs, as we talked to Mo Bamba about. Although Mo Bamba did miss a pretty wide open dunk tonight, but I'm happy he took it.
Didn't he get fouled on that one?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Just missed it.
Maybe B-ball. B-ball got fouled on a dunk. Yeah.
But I see Maxey, like, you know, he has that, he's using a little bit more hesitation. You've seen it in the practice videos. You saw it in the game. Whether it's hesitation into a blow by or hesitation into a step back or whatever, like, that allows him that little split second of sort of having the defense frozen, allows him to sort of survey the court in that moment. And, you know, I think that's part of why there's so much, Nick Nurse has spent so much time focusing on sharing the ball, of there being flow to the offense, both to be unpredictable towards the ends of games, and also because we don't have, like, he's not Trae Young. He's not Mike Conley. Like,
I'm just saying he's not a point guard.
But I disagree with that. Like, he is. He's not, like, the best passing point guard in the league, but he is a guy that can have the ball in his hands, that can break a press, that can get to the basket, that can shoot threes. That I just don't think that there is a traditional, in a lot of ways, across the league, one guy. Like Denver doesn't have like a point guard. Like there's just guys that can make the passes. There's guys that can make the plays.
Hold on, no.
He can make the passes, and I want him to be able to work through those things over the course of the year, especially in preseason. Like he should be making mistakes. He should be trying shit. Nurse wanted to be aggressive this game, and I was fine with how he played.
Denver doesn't have a point guard, but they have the best passing center in the history of the NBA.
I know, but I'm just saying, like I think you were very much like a label guy. And I don't necessarily think that it is necessary to.
He's not that good at passing. How about that? He's not that good at passing.
He's improving as a passer.
He has
room to grow as a passer. Absolutely. 100%. But when he was playing off of James Harden last year, that's not something that he was tasked to do. Okay. And so he has to keep working on it this year. That has to be something he factors in more. And that's what, you know, the offense will work through.
Very much about labels. There are two positions on the court that exist for sure. Point guard and center. Like they just do.
I think center more than point guard. I understand what you're saying, but I would say center is a more, you need someone to protect the rim. Otherwise, your defense will get gashed.
Pat Beverly did not look like a corpse. You know, I just haven't watched him very much in the last couple of years. So I was expecting somebody who looked sort of like finished, but he doesn't look finished. He was caring like he always does, which is great, and competing. And I thought the team competed on defense up until the last quarter or so. I thought they put a lot of pressure on the ball. It seemed like they were working hard there. But Pat Beverly looked very playable to me. You know, he didn't look like he's finished at all. It looks like he hasn't at least one more year left in the tank.
Yeah, he gives a fuck. I need him to hit. If he hits threes off the catch, his defense will be fine in spurts, and at least make it annoying on some guys. He's not like fun to play against, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty slow at this point, but no, he's not dead. He's not Danny levels of retirable.
Yeah. I just expected to see a player who I didn't think had anything left. Like we've seen a lot of those guys lately.
Sure.
And he just looked like he had something left, which was encouraging to me, you know?
Yeah. I like the little hook shot.
Mm-hmm.
I like the little like touch off the glass. Those are some nice plays. Like finishing with touch. He's not like necessarily known for his touch around the rim. And especially because he's not a vertical threat. Like he has to be at least something useful there. That's why PJ was so frustrating last year, is because like he's obviously not going to dunk. And he has, aside from that push shot, which he shoots it so strangely, he's got like nothing, no other way to finish outside of the corner. And it was nice to see Pat finish in different ways.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez is brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, the original sponsor of the Ricky. 360, I found out today. Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners have purchased engagement rings from LL Pavorsky. 360. A number that many people are saying is fake, but I do not think it's fake. I think it's real. We actually heard from number 345. Hey, Spike and Mike, longtime listener of the pod, first-time reviewer of the sponsors, wanted to briefly share my experience with LL and buying an engagement ring and echo all of the amazing feedback shared by Ricky listeners. Simply put, LL is the man. From the beginning, LL went above and beyond to make the process of buying a ring easy and understandable. He took time ahead of our appointments to get to know me and what my fiance was looking for in a ring. I had many questions throughout, and LL was extremely thorough and patient in answering all of them. Above all, there was no pressure. Upon picking up my fiance's ring, I walked into the store to find LL proudly standing next to a Ricky 10-year long sleeve and Coven t-shirt. It felt like a reverse jigsaw, a difficult choice between two amazing options. Ultimately, having to choose the shirt felt infinitely more stressful than the process of buying an engagement ring. There's the guy. LL Pavorsky, also a sponsor of our Bark in the Park team, as he always is. 707 Walnut is where the store is, but you got to make an appointment. Do it over email, lee@llpavorsky.com. Call him, 215-627-2252. Tweet at him, @LL Pavorsky. As I mentioned, a supporter of our charities, Providence Animal Center and Mama T's Community Fridge. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
He doesn't do preseason or offseason, just cabana season.
So, B-ball, I'm sure Nick Nurse told him somewhere, I want you to be aggressive offensively. And boy, did B-ball Paul listen. That's shooting it. A three the first time he touched the ball.
Immediately, right away.
I appreciated B-ball's energy on the offensive glass.
Always.
He looked like B-ball. He does probably need to settle down a little bit with the there's a little too much offense from B-ball tonight.
Preseason, baby. Let him try it.
Yeah.
Let him try it. And honestly, the whole season is preseason. So I would, if he plays exactly like this all season long, I frankly don't give a fuck. Let him do it. Let him do it. Let him work through it. Let him figure it out. Let him be a weapon. It's all about getting to April, May with B-ball fully optimized.
PJ Tucker looked like he had some rest this offseason, had some burgers. I mean, he moved around fine. He's PJ Tucker.
Do you see his stats?
No. Was he all zeros? No, he took a shot. So
he took a shot.
Yeah. Took a couple shots.
0-for-1. Three rebounds, three assists.
There you go. Not bad.
Pretty big. 12 minutes. PJ, take a break till December. We don't need you. We got plenty of dog type guys that can do little else
than be a dog. Yeah. The Tobias Harris posted up within the first 3 minutes of the game.
Take your time, babe. You got all day.
He posted up again later on. I'm going to try to be nice to Tobias because I just, as you've mentioned before, this contract has been 2 decades long. Mm-hmm. He's been paid $1 million more each year. It's up to, I think, in the 70 millions. He is a nice player and a good man. I can't see past him right now. And without Embiid and Harden on the team, he's doing all of the Toby stuff that is sort of maddening to watch. But
he's doing it, man.
He's
got all the time in the world. Tobias has the ball. The shot clock just fades away. He can do whatever he needs. Take your time, babe. It is finally day one of the expiring
the last year.
Tobias contract. We are finally here.
Yeah.
Really interesting. I know this is not interesting for right now, but very intrigued to see what he gets this offseason.
Yeah, I am too. You know, after this, I'm curious to see. I think he's probably a 3-year, $45 million guy somewhere or something, or 4 years. I mean, he's what, 31, something like that, something right around there. He's got 3 or 4 years, good years left. I think he's got to be 30. He's got to be at
31.
Least. Yeah, there you go. So Mo Bamba's gonna have to convince me, man.
Sure.
Because he did not look good. And I think for me,
banked in a three, missed a dunk, hit a little 19 footer, curled in right there.
He can shoot a little bit. I think the thing for me that I have to wonder about defensively is that he's not particularly quick. And he's not particularly strong. So he's big, but he doesn't seem strong or like fast on his feet or anything. And I just physically, I don't know how it's going to work. He would have to be pretty brilliant, you know, to make it work. But I was not super impressed with Mo's first preseason game, one preseason game, but was not super impressed with his performance tonight.
No, I would like to see a little more like ferocity. Like, go get the fucking rebound.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, pick and pop, pick and roll. That's got to be it. And then stretch. And if he plays with B-ball or Embiid or whatever, then it's just like stretch the floor and be ready to shoot it and shoot it high and never miss. So those are – it should be a simple game for Bamba. And obviously the – you know, being the only center out there is complicated and – deciding whether or not you're dropping or switching or hedging or whatever, but he's very big and he can shoot. He can block shots. Like, he should be an NBA player.
He should.
And I feel like, you know, I mentioned Chris Boucher to him and he seemed to, you know, respond to that positively. So I would like to just like, he should be in the Nick Nurse rotation and he should be a playable player.
Well, he's going to get a chance, right? I mean,
I don't know. I'm interested to see what the first rotation is.
Yeah.
If it's 10 deep, say Harden plays and it's the main starting five.
Okay.
It's definitely Melton. It's definitely B-ball.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're talking three of Kelly Oubre, Pat Beverly, Daniel House, Jaden Springer.
I think it's the first three you named to start. That would be my guess, right? Daniel House was the first guy off the bench tonight.
I saw him take a catch and shoot three, not a step back.
So Patrick Beverly is really the only other, like, he's really the guy who can run the point on the bench. I mean, I almost think it was written that he's going to play. I would be pretty surprised if he doesn't play. So I
don't think that he has. If you're calling Maxey not a point guard, I don't think Pat Beverly has a font of point guard skills.
Well, it does more than anybody else on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, Melton, I would say, is relatively similar.
You think?
As far as straight line drive and just like making the easy pass type of thing. I don't think you really want either of them running pick and roll.
No, for sure.
And then same thing with Springer, like not currently a point guard. As far as like a guy you want the ball in his hands making decisions, you'd rather consider him a wing. I honestly consider all of them a wing. Pat Bev is just a very small wing. not much wingspan, but a wing nonetheless.
Oubre, I can tell right away, is going to drive me fucking up batshit crazy.
Yeah, but I'll get a couple timely buckets, a dunk in transition.
He one, really like,
D,
is.
One D up and then turn to the crowd. Crowd goes nuts for him.
He really is a player who, and you could see from last year, he just really needs to be on a bad team.
That's certainly been most of his career, but yeah. Let's find out. It is worth finding out for his body and skill set on both ends. It is worth finding out if he can carve out a fine role as a, you know, he could very easily be their best offensive option off the bench for points. Yeah, I mean, you're not asking him to do that much.
Yeah.
Exploit a mismatch, catch and shoot, you know, occasionally defend somebody that's decent on the other team's wing. We'll find out. And if he sucks, then they'll bench him or trade him or cut him.
Is it Petrusev or Petrusev? The person doing play-by-play, I don't know her name, I'm sorry, with J.J. Redick.
Lisa Byington.
Kept calling him Petrusev.
I've heard it both ways.
Okay.
So if I will trust Kate Scott on the pronunciation when she brings it for us.
The good thing with Petrusev is he does move around pretty well for a big guy. He seems like he moves. He's not like cement footed or anything. The other thing is, I don't know what that guy's supposed to be doing out there. I don't know what he does well or anything. I guess he shoots all right. He had a nice little floater tonight.
He always has a really nice floater. I've always been impressed by his touch in the like 6 to 10 foot range. It feels like he's automatic there. It feels like most like Eastern European players are pretty automatic from that floating touch range. Yeah, I mean, he let up a big offensive rebound dunk because he's just not like that explosive as a leaper. He had a nice little cut. I'd be interested to see if he plays with like another center sometimes because he doesn't have singular rim protection abilities or anything. I would be, again, totally fine with him just not being on the team. To me, he doesn't offer much.
Anybody? So Turk Smith played, Ricky Council played. What else?
Ricky was making mistakes.
Yeah.
I just don't see him being a flow type of offense. It's hard to see him unless he's like, okay, I'm going to ISO and I'm going to take a sort of contested 6-footer. It's not, I don't know the hell.
Would have been a great process player.
Repetition. Obviously. Of course. Yeah. Would have been a great process player. Should have been. Born at the wrong time. But Turk, I just love, man. I just absolutely love Turk Smith. He is, his jumper seems to have gotten a lot more consistent as far as how it looks. It seems like he still has burst. It seems like he's like paying attention on defense more than he did at NC State. Kind of just a guy that's going to have a knack. I think odds are in his first season, if he gets any time on the court as a two-way guy, his numbers will probably look bad if he plays, because he's so young, yeah, and because he is small and skinny and has to be, is not going to be able to rely on great physical tools or like a consistent jumper or whatever. But he's really fast with the ball. He just pops off the screen. He had a nice little lefty floater through contact tonight. I think he's going to be a really solid NBA player. And I think he should, because of how we talked about the Sixers don't have many guys that can do stuff with the ball in their hands. I would be curious, especially if like Beverly gets hurt or Springer or something, do you just bump him up to a regular roster spot if you find a place, find a home for Petrushev or Danny doesn't make the team or whatever? I think he's good. I think he's good right now. And even though it probably won't play itself out on court this season to be actually helpful, I think that he's a guy that I would love as a, you know, Bones Highland style maxi backup. Like, I think he's probably better with the ball in his hands, like going out the rim and stuff. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see how his career plays out.
He's fun to watch, you know, really in these games. I'd be curious to see what he looks like in and he would be fun, by the way, to get hot in some random, you know, December game against Utah or something.
Eight guys have COVID. Here comes Turk Smith playing 44 minutes. Absolutely. I'm in on that game. Fast forward to that game. Skip everything else.
Danny Green didn't look any worse.
No. Yeah. It's Danny.
Look the same as when he was here.
Looks the same. Knows where to be on defense. Just can't quite get there all the time, but he knows where to be. If you ask him, he knows. And I do like Javonte Smart. I do think he's an NBA player. Has a weird jumper, but it goes in, and I think he is reasonably capable as a guy with the ball in his hands. I think he's totally fine. And he's athletic. I like having athletic guys. So sue me. Sue me for liking athletic guys, Spike.
Do you think there could be a lawsuit for you liking athletic guys? Yeah. That was it. There were some nice things watching. It's really hitting me that I had a window to not do this and I didn't take it to watch the games. And here I am watching the games.
I'm not going to respond to that. I'm not
going to. Had an opportunity.
I'm not going to respond to you second guessing this.
Well, I'm not second guessing it. I wasn't really second guessing it. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez is brought to you by Mortgage CS. It is tough out there buying a home. It is tough out there. And mortgage rates are higher than they've been in a while. And what I would suggest to you is not only do you need a realtor who's your partner, you need a mortgage broker who's truly your partner. Mortgage CS can be your partner. They are an independent mortgage broker. They're not too big. They are going to give you the personal attention you need. If you've been with a mortgage broker before, you know, sometimes it's quick, annoying conversations. You don't really know what's going on. You sort of have to beg for them to get back to you sometimes. Not Mortgage CS. They are fully focused on you, fully focused on customer service. Every single one of our Ricky listeners who have used Mortgage CS has been super, super thrilled with it, has been just effusive in their praise. I say independent mortgage broker. What a mortgage broker does is they're not a lender. They don't give you the money. They're the ones that go to the different lenders, the different banks, and find you your mortgage, find you the rate that you want to go with. The great thing about Mortgage CS being independent is that sometimes mortgage brokers have deals with these banks that if they push you a certain way, they're going to get more money out of it. There's something in it for them, not Mortgage CS. They're fully independent. They're there for you all the time. It is truly the best experience that you're going to have getting a mortgage. It's not like a fun experience, but they will make it cool. 267-391-7425. That is Ben, the CEO's cell phone number. He will respond to it at all times, maybe not in the middle of the night, but anytime before the middle of the night. 267-391-7425. Call him, text him anytime. When you're getting a mortgage, you might need the person you're working with at any time, at night, maybe on the weekend to get a pre-qualification letter, to answer a question. What about this? What about this? What about this? So do that, 267-391-7425, or go to mortgagecs.com/Ricky to schedule your consultation. If I do not convince you, if all the Ricky people don't convince you, I urge you to Google them and look at all the five-star reviews, hundreds of five-star reviews. This advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal housing opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS 1464766. Visit mortgagecs.com/Ricky for more information. Mortgage CS also a sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez Bark in the Park team to benefit Providence Animal Center. Thank you, Mortgage CS. This week, Joel Embiid, in our last pod, we were talking about he was deciding between France, Cameroon, and the United States. He decides he wants to play for Team USA for the 2024 Olympics. He says, I love all three options, you know, with my home country, which I love a lot, but I really want to participate in the Olympics, and that's been my goal, my dream. And you add that with the fact that my son is American. I've been here for such a long time. I'm really thankful for the opportunity. France, the commitment they were willing to make, I really appreciated. It was a tough decision. I feel like for the past few years since Arthur has been born, every decision has just been made on family, my family, my son, and having the chance to represent a country like the USA. I think it is good that he's playing for the USA. I think you will probably not want him to play more basketball, but I think it's a thing that superstars do. I think creating that relationship with other superstars is good in terms of like recruiting and being considered in that world. And there are a lot of players who have talked about that experience playing with these great players in a really, really positive way in terms of like basketball playing. So I'm glad he's going to do it. I hope he's healthy enough to do it, but I'm glad he's playing for Team USA.
Yeah, I mean, good for him. The first Sixer, I'm sure Iguodala has been on the USA team, obviously, but was not really a factor. I mean, he might have even been after he was on the Sixers before he was on the team. Since Iverson, for Embiid to be like a focal point of the team, and obviously Iverson is a specific guy, and like that was not like a positive Olympics. Mm-mm. Embiid is going to be good mm-hmm. and be helpful to this team that needs rebounding, defense around the rim, and it's going to be cool to see him play an all-star game that matters with these guys. So that's cool for Sixers fans. That's cool for basketball fans around the world. I think the recruiting thing is absolutely possible, but and I don't love saying it, it is also possible that he is going to be recruited.
Yes, for sure.
Doing the recruiting, great. Yep. Being recruited to go somewhere else, less good.
Yes, but certainly, you know, possible.
Playing for America, that's awesome for him. Good for his family. Another notch in the belt of maybe he doesn't like to move. France is far. He's in America now.
Well.
So that's good.
Yeah.
But no, that's cool. I wish I cared more about the international game like this. And maybe this will get me to care.
I think it's cool when there's a purpose. And I sort of think that at different times in the U.S. Olympic thing, there has been, hey, we need to be serious about this one and let's be awesome and just kick the shit out of everyone. And I think their performance this summer has sort of put USA basketball in a position where they're like, hey, we need to be awesome. So I hope this will be one of those teams, you know, the dream team, the redeem team, all the teams that are really, really good. And I hope it's a positive. I think it could be a positive basketball experience for him and can certainly put, I know he won the MVP and he was top two other times, but I think it can just sort of raise the greatness quotient of your career. So yeah. I think it'd be good for him.
Hopefully it just getting a taste of playing with guys this good and succeeding at a high level, which he hasn't done, would be give him a little bit more hunger to do it in Philadelphia. Like. I'm just always trying to find it. I'm trying to find whatever is the perfect cocktail of motivation to get him to not just be good, because he's obviously very good, but decide, like Giannis has decided, like Jokic has decided, like many superstars of their level have decided over the course of some playoffs, that my team is not fucking losing.
Yes.
And I would love for some playoffs in the future, when he's wearing a Sixers jersey, for Joel Embiid to decide we're not losing and to enact that reality.
So James Harden showed up at training camp in his tiny little shorts to make his show off his skinny legs. So everybody thinks he's in good shape. He's doing drills and all that kind of shit. And Shams had some things to say. Here's the little audio about the potential of him finally being dealt to the Clippers, the only team that he wants to be traded to.
And by all accounts, James Harden has been professional. He's been engaged. He has not participated in live competition, so live five-on-five, live scrimmages as of yet. But he's believed to be in great shape, and a clear part of this professional approach seems to be that desire that he still has to get traded and in hopes of what he wants, which is a trade to the Clippers. And sources tell me that the Clippers have been offering one unprotected first-round pick and a pick swap to Philadelphia for Harden. And the Clippers, I'm told, are also in talks elsewhere with multiple other teams about moving pick swaps for additional draft capital to bolster their proposal to the Sixers. And in their mind, the Sixers have also been valuing Terrence Mann, the fifth-year forward, as well as multiple first-round draft picks and any potential Harden deal from the Clippers. So there's still a gap that remains. And Terrence Mann is a guy that has gotten a lot of value around the league. That's an attractive piece across the league. That's a guy that's name also came up in conversations that the Clippers had with Portland around Jrue Holiday. So that's a valuable player that the Clippers have had. But the Sixers have made it clear to the Clippers what their threshold is for a Harden deal. And as of right now, there's no drama in Sixers camp. We'll see how long that remains. This is a guy that's an all-star, NBA's assist leader. So the Sixers do want to find some value for him and try to continue to compete in the Eastern Conference.
Here's my question for you, Mike. And obviously the one unprotected first round pick is news to all of us, as we didn't totally know that. And there was also some reporting that Terrence Mann was a sticking point or something,
which I don't necessarily buy.
I don't buy either. What do you think? I'm asking you to tea leaf read, because I'm having trouble. I'm having trouble figuring out what the purpose of this sort of coming out right now is. Like, I don't really understand why all of a sudden. I understand the urgency to get a deal done before the start of the season. I understand that. But there's just something weird here that I can't wrap my arms around. Like, I want to say, well, maybe Morey leaks it so he can show Harden that he's actually trying to trade him and that it's really not enough. I have this sneaky suspicion that Daryl wants to find a way to trick him into coming back and playing here and not wanting a trade. And that's where I'm trying to figure it out. I can't figure out the motivation of this.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's here.
Yes. He hasn't played yet, though. He hasn't played for the Sixers yet.
Neither is Korkmaz.
For sure. And also, just something to remind you of, as I was writing for the newsletter last week, because I was trying to remember it, when he wanted to trade out of Houston, he was dicking around a little bit in camp, but then he came in, and the first three games, he was like 40-15 every game. And then all of a sudden, he was like, nah, fuck this. You guys have kept me too long. Fell off a cliff, and they ended up trading him. I just can't figure out what is exactly going on right now.
Yes, I find the whole thing confusing.
Okay.
And the fact that there were reports saying he's coming and he's going to be difficult.
Yes.
And he's going to be so mean. And yes, he's going to be like actually really personally mean to people individually. Like just like going around. It was very odd reports from like everybody. And then he shows up and he just plays.
Just normal. Yeah.
He just played the team. Like the first day he wasn't like available for reporters, like or at least like playing during that portion, and then he was shooting during that portion, and then it was just like, I guess he's just there, and he doesn't seem to be lobbing personal accusations at anyone. Daryl and him haven't interacted, to my knowledge.
He hasn't kicked anyone in the dick or anything?
Hasn't kicked anybody in the dick.
No.
It's just very strange. I don't know why this report would be leaked. I am certain that Daryl would not trade James for one unprotected Clippers first round pick and some pick swap. Of course not. I don't think that Terrence Mann, if the Sixers got Terrence Mann in the deal, I'm not saying they won't get him, but if they do get him, it would be to then eventually reroute him to some other team. Or maybe they reroute Melton instead if they think that Mann is a better fit or something, whatever. But it's not like Mann is the key to unlocking the Sixers situation. It would just be somebody finds the league, if the league values him at a higher level, that can be in the package in addition to whatever salary to go get the star that the Sixers use the first round picks that they get from Harden to eventually get figure like Zach LaVine or something for like a couple picks or whatever, just as an example. But I don't know. I don't know any of it. I don't know why Harden showed up. I don't know if he's finally accepted that the best way for him to get traded is for him to show up and play well. But for him to go from telling girl at club to hold up that sign and then a week later go, Daryl Morey is actually my boss now. Not a liar. I misspoke. Whatever. I don't know. I don't understand any of it. I don't understand. I still don't understand. There keeps being reports in different like full like TikTok transcriptions about what actually happened. Of like, what did Harden expect there to be? What did Morey expect there to be? What does Morey actually want out of all this? Because I think you're right. I think part of it is Daryl just wants him to be back. Yes. He didn't want him back enough to give him a 4-year max contract, obviously, because obviously he doesn't deserve that, because obviously no one around the league is giving him anywhere close to that amount of money. But he wanted him back at least a little. And if that was the case, then why wouldn't he communicate to his own player or his own player's agent during the transitionary period before free agency actually began? You can say, hey, an offer is going to come. Or like, hey, we want you back, but if you want to see if you can get... Like, there being no communication and essentially ghosting him and then Harden flipping the table and saying, I'm going home. And then Daryl being like, well, wait, why would you... We were simply scared of the tampering charges. Like, this can't have gone exactly the way Daryl wanted it to go, or he would be fucking insane.
Well, I think... I agree with you, but I do think that part of it was that... Team Harden fuck things up by starting all that Houston shit. And I think from a negotiation standpoint, if you are the Sixers and you're sort of unsure about what Harden's motivations are once free agency starts, if he hasn't opted in, the last thing you want to do is give him your offer early.
Of course.
So they can shop it around. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah. You can say, we're not going to give you an offer yet, but we would say like, hey, we understand that you have interest from Houston, that there were reports over the course of the whole season since Christmas that you might want to go back to Houston and be the guy again. We want you back in Philadelphia, but go see what you can get from them. And then once you have their offer, we will decide if we want to beat it. Or, you know, we can just keep in touch because we want you back. We want you in Philadelphia. But obviously we have to consider our own business situations, keep it above board. But what seemed to happen is that they just didn't say anything. And they were just hoping that he got a shitty deal and then would have to come back to Philadelphia. The picking up his option is confusing and seemed to catch the Sixers by surprise. It just seems all very odd because Daryl is now trying to convince everyone that like he wants Harden back and he loves Harden. And he thinks that Harden is the best case scenario for the Sixers actually contending this year. Now, obviously, I don't believe that. I don't believe that the Sixers can win with James Harden here.
Me either.
Because...
Me either. Just wanna...
He like fully doesn't want to be here because of his own emotional baggage and also how he is perceived to have been treated by Daryl and the Sixers organization this offseason. So I can be critical of James being extremely emotional and not taking ownership of going, I played like shit in the playoff, and not in the whole playoffs. He obviously had two very, very good games, but in the last two games of the playoffs.
And by the way, he was bad against the Nets pretty much too. He was shooting like 20% against the rim. I know you were yeah. in
no,
Europe
no, I,
or whatever.
I was watching him miss a lot of layups on my honeymoon.
Yeah.
But like, I can be critical of Harden for those things and not taking ownership for why he has less value around the league than he used to, because he's talked his way out of and moaned his way out of every place he's ever been and still thinks he should be treated like a crazy superstar and he's sacrificed so much, all that stuff that we've talked about all offseason. And also critical of Daryl for going like, what did you want to happen? What did you want to happen this offseason? You seem excited that James is here and playing and that this is the best case scenario and that like essentially all of the blame is going to be put on the feet of Doc Rivers for why the Sixers weren't as good last year. Or he thinks it was just randomness because his number machine spits out the 4% championship number, whatever it is, whatever the number is. I'm making up 4%.
Championship.
But like machine. They're both to blame because the situation right now is extremely untenable. And if anyone thinks, Daryl, if anyone thinks that this is just going to work out.
I think he does, though.
If he's going to think that it's just like, hey, he's here, he's playing. His teammates like him. They're taking fun pictures together. The Sixers Instagram is saying the vibes are immaculate. No, they're not. No, they're not. No, they're not.
I think Daryl is, I don't know if you can relate to this.
But if he, wait, sorry. Let me just drill down. If he wanted him back, then why didn't he just like hold his hand a little bit more and say, hey, if you want to get the mega offer from Houston, go get it, but we want you back. But what seemed to happen is he was like ghosting him, stiffing him, not like saying like, go fuck yourself. We got other stuff going on. And then Harden took it personally. And whether or not Daryl was doing that or not doing that, Daryl's got to fucking know that this guy who he's worked with for this long would act this way or respond this way. Even if Daryl, his best case scenario, if you asked him back in May, was Harden picks up the option or Harden for like 2 years, $85 million, whatever. Even if that was his best case scenario and that's what he wanted, couldn't he have manipulated the situation to be one that didn't end up in Harden calling him out publicly in China to kids and then at various clubs in the greater metro areas around the country and say, and then like him on a whim showing up and not acting like it's going to be okay. Like couldn't you have done that? I just feel like the whole thing was wildly, wildly botched. And just because it's like relatively calm waters right now doesn't mean it's just going to work. I am flummoxed by the idea that like, it's all good. Everybody's feeling good, right? Like people want Harden back now and he's playing and he doesn't look fat. And everything's cool, right? Like how am I going insane? Why is this the situation? How was this the ultimate goal? If you really wanted him back, couldn't you have done that? And if like everybody else around the league that is not like 12 MVP level candidate players, everybody else other than those people are someone you wouldn't consider trading him for, like DeMar DeRozan as just a random example, like, why wouldn't you have shown him that you wanted him? All of it is very bizarre to me. Like, the Sixers kind of like are, maybe I'm making this up, but they are sort of carrying themselves with a posture of like, yep, yeah, we knew it. He's here and he's playing and team looks pretty good. Nick Nurse, like, this is what we wanted all along. If this is what you wanted all along, then you were all insane because you became another geopolitical conflict. Another one. Why? How could this be what you have wanted? Maybe I'm just bad at business, but this is not how I would have done it if I wanted this to be the result. Anyway, sorry I interrupted you and kept going.
Nah, I'll just, that was good. I'm just going to sort of leave it as it is. What do you think opening night, October 26th?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea because we got into, you thought it was ridiculous that I would, that Toronto would trade Pascal Siakam as an example for James Harden.
Yes.
I don't think that Daryl would trade James Harden for Pascal Siakam. I don't think that.
Really?
I would. And if I was Toronto, I also wouldn't do that. But I don't think Daryl would do it. And by the way, just to say it, because I wrote it down, CBS Sports has Siakam as the 31st player in the league and Harden is 33rd. Both are in the tier four of Yahoo's rankings, came out by Vinny Goodwill and Dan Devine and Jake
my
Fisher.
My point being...
And Hoopshype had Harden ranked over Siakam. So the idea that it's ridiculous... No. Obviously, I'm saying I would not, if I was Toronto, do that trade.
Ridiculous.
I'm just saying it's not ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Because they're a team that's going to win 39 games and live in the wilderness again. And if they don't want to give Pascal Siakam a max contract to like
then
solidify
they should go
their
get draft picks. Then they should go get draft picks.
That's absolutely fair. I totally agree.
Yeah.
But if they decided like, hey, we've been in the wilderness for a while, maybe let's
stay in the wilderness
let's try one season of James Harden having a point guard there and try it out. I'm not saying I would do it. I'm just saying it is patently not ridiculous if they're both ranked very similarly across the spectrum of basketball internet.
What if the Raptors trade for him but also give him a giant bag full of plane tickets to Los Angeles so he can go back and forth as much as he wants?
That's nice. And they still, it is interesting that, I mean, I guess the Canadian airline system is still bags of plane tickets that has to be given that way. But if that's what he needs, I think they can get him. I think they could placate him that way.
The rights to Ricky Sanchez is brought to you by Briggs Auction. Briggs Auction, I love, man. They're on a roll again. Briggs Auction, a family-owned and operated auction house in Delco. Auctions every week. Now, the one going on this week is not specifically my thing, but I was Googling it and it seems like a pretty big fucking deal. So this guy, Dr. Mead Schaefer, huge collector of like antiques and antique like pottery and all this high value cool shit, and they are doing a collection of his stuff right now. Goes till October 13th. The lifetime collection of preservationist historian and collector Dr. Mead Schaefer of Garnet Valley. Bidding is open right now. There's all kinds of cool shit in there. And then next week, there's going to be a Discovery auction. Discovery ones are my favorite because there's everything there. There is art. There is collectibles. Sometimes there's music instruments. There's furniture. The thing about Briggs Auction is one-of-a-kind items that you're not going to find anywhere else is Briggs Auction. Go to BriggsAuction.com, BriggsAuction.com, or go to the App Store or Google Play, download the app. My recommendation to you is you check in once a week. Check in once a week on the auction that is going on that week, if there's one auction, and then, you know, you'll have to check in more if you're going to bid on something. But CJ has found clothes on Briggs Auction that he loves, sort of like vintage clothes. I have found collectibles that are unnamed, but cool collectibles. Some are in my office right now at work, and then some are sitting at Briggs Auction that I have to pick up. If you like stuff, if you like cool shit, Briggs Auction is where you go. And if you're downsizing and you want to auction your stuff somewhere, send an email to info@BriggsAuction.com. Briggs Auction is a sponsor of the Rights Ricky Sanchez run team for Providence Animal Center's Bark in the Park. We love them for it. BriggsAuction.com, BriggsAuction.com. We got this email from Harden. About Harden.
Finally.
About Harden from
James. Thank you. Writes to RickySanchez.com@gmail.com. It has any Sixers players that want to email us, please do.
This came from Pedro. Hi, Spike, Mike, and CJ. Since it wouldn't make sense for the Clippers to have both Harden and Westbrook, how would you feel about the Sixers getting Russ in a Harden trade? While Harden is, of course, the better player, Russ would be an upgrade simply because he's not a fucking loser. He shows up and he plays hard every game. And for all of Russ's faults, he would fit in well with a big that can shoot like Joel and run the offense when Joel sits. What do you think? Would you take him back in a trade if you got the picks you wanted?
He's got years on his contract.
Oh, he does.
It's not. No. I think Harden and Westbrook like each other. That's part of why they would want to have him there. But I don't think Westbrook like being the point guard off the bench in a vacuum would be bad, but Daryl has traded for Westbrook before and it has gone extremely poorly, and so I don't think that that will happen. But like, are you going to pivot away from Harden? Because I wanted to bring up one more thing.
Yeah, I was going to, so go ahead.
There was a good AU article, Andrew Unterberger, on the site about how the Sixers lack any semblance of the vibes emanating from Citizens Bank Park and the Philadelphia Phillies, who are on another wonderful postseason run.
Sort of an unfair comparison, but yes, it was
good article. But I thought the article was good, and the vibes are obviously at least partially, not entirely, but partially due to James Harden still being here and the muddiness of that. And there's a quote from AU: "Building any kind of team chemistry or identity or good feeling with Harden present will be like trying to build a canoe with a hole in the middle. You can try, I guess, but you're not going to get far with it. This might be true even if he wasn't very publicly demanding a trade. Now that he is, he will suck the air out of every room he is in and just leave everyone breathing toxicity." The Sixers are still pretending that, like, it's fine. Yeah, he doesn't have to address it. He doesn't have to address the fact that he called our boss a liar. Like, he doesn't have to address it. Why would he address it? Crazy. But MOC tweeted in response to that, which I thought was a good indication of his mindset and a lot of people's mindsets that are similar. This article really speaks to something that MOC has come to realize, which is that at this point in his life, all he really wants out of fandom is for the experience of following the team to be fun and to like and respect the guys on it. Yep. That's what really informs his trade Harden ASAP mindset. And I understand that. I understand that on like a, we are spending our time doing this and it's fun to root for guys that are fun to root for. Mm-hmm. But I just think there's a middle ground. And that's where I perhaps alone land. I wouldn't just trade Harden for whatever. And I definitely wouldn't do what I suspect Daryl is doing, which is still considering Harden one of the top 20 players in the NBA. Or the idea that Harden could succeed here this coming season. So I have to believe, and I do believe, that there is a middle ground between trading Harden for expiring contracts from the Clippers and a you know, pick 25 in the 2027 draft or whatever, and like Daryl holding out for whatever the fuck he's holding out for, whatever, whichever of those cap space guys in the 2024 free agent class he is holding out for, like to have their bird rights or whatever. So I just feel like there's a middle ground.
The problem is, I agree with you. The problem is currently that Harden's one team stance makes it very difficult to find the middle ground with one team. It's like
totally agree.
Negotiating with one team and they know you're the only team you're negotiating with is like, how can that? I've been through negotiations with people at work, and it's when you know you. It makes it very tough if there are not other options. And for Morey to find the acceptable deal, Harden really needs to open up his list of teams to more than just one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Harden, Dame getting traded to Milwaukee is a little bit of a a free pass for the Sixers to just do that on their own and not have to be given permission by Harden to like look elsewhere.
Yeah.
I think there wasn't in some of those article. Dame has more years and he's a different player. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Not a dickhead,
but there's a precedent of it, I think.
Yes.
And Harden is like towards the end of his, if not his career, then at least his prime. And I doubt he would just sit the whole season. Anyway, I of course would love that bigger list. I'm dying for that, trying to get my hands on that big list, James. Just open it up, babe. Like, give me a couple teams. That's all we need. I really am extremely, this all would be so interesting as a thought experiment if I was not a fan of this team.
Yeah.
If I was a Nuggets fan, or a Hornets fan, or really wherever that was not a part of this, I would be like, God, I'm really interested in what the fuck happens up there in Philadelphia. But right now I'm just hanging by a thread. End of statement. And I don't feel like the vibes are good. I refuse to believe it. I refuse to be back in. Even though Jaden Springer's block on Jason Tatum tonight was one of the best basketball moments in a long time. For me personally. Thank you, Jaden Springer.
We got a number of voicemails like this one, but I will just do a couple of them. 833-LICKFACE is the number.
Coach, it's CJ, Daryl. Saw the decision. You're not Michael Jordan, Spike, okay? It's 8 minutes long. Took me 10 minutes to find the actual answer. I heard yes, something about a sickness, okay? Nobody cares. You're a liar. Your word means nothing. Okay. Your word in your balls. You ever hear that one? Your word in your balls. Coach, talk to him.
That we got this one.
Hey, Mike, CJ, Daryl, and the other supposed host of this podcast who I will not name. This is Joe from Philadelphia. Just calling to express my deep frustrations with Spike over deciding to watch the games despite giving us his word that he would not. I have an official statement on the matter, and it is simply that Spike Eskin is a liar, and I will never listen to a podcast that he's a part of. Let me say that again. Spike Efkin is a liar, and I will never listen to a podcast that he is a part of.
We got this email from Daniel at writes@rickysanchez@gmail.com. It's Friday night, and I'm in shambles after watching Spike's version of The Decision. I've always been a Spike guy. I was a big WYSP listener back when it was a rock station. Then when Spike started hosting Sports Talk, he became my favorite host, not just at the time, but ever. Despite growing up listening to WIP. After leaving Philadelphia in 2014, I discovered that Spike had a Sixers podcast with the guy from Liberty Ballers that wasn't Bodner. I was on board. I've been a listener since then. I've donated to Providence Animal Center and bought the t-shirt with Hinky's face, even wear it in public. The Ricky is the only podcast I regularly listen to, and I haven't watched the Sixers in years. It was devastating to hear Spike break his word that he gave us listeners. Can I trust anything he says? Meanwhile, I think all of his opinions are wrong and sometimes even fast-forwarding through parts of the pod when he speaks, but at least Mike says what he means. I've spent years rolling my eyes when Mike says something absurd, like how Toronto would consider trading Siakam for Harden.
We've already covered this.
But if he believes it, isn't that more important? In the video, Spike asked for us to suggest punishments, and I think there's only one. All of us Spike guys now have to become Mike guys. We need to buy DVDs of Young Rock and find women's basketball teams to coach. This may not sound like a punishment for Spike, because it's not. Watching Sixers is punishment enough. It's a punishment that all of us Spike guys deserve, because we spent years misjudging Mike. I'm sorry, Mike. Thank you for being a podcast host we can trust. Dan. A lot of different, what's it called, punishments that people have written in with. I think what I'll do is I'll send them to you and CJ, and maybe you come up with a few and we let people vote on them. Is that fair? Or do you not even want to address it because you're so disgusted by me?
I am very disgusted, and yeah. I will let CJ handle that, because the idea that there's... I feel like I offered so many compromises and none of those were acceptable. And so you sort of invented one yourself about a different punishment. And so that won't be something that I take part in.
Okay, fair. Two voicemails and then we go. 833 Lickface.
Hey guys, it's John from San Diego. I have a question. Hey, so the Bucks trade Drew Holiday basically for Dame, and then the Bucks are considered the leaders in the East, the favorites in the East. And then later on, The Celtics, they trade for Drew Holiday, and now they're considered the favorites in the East. How can those both be true? I don't know.
It is interesting how the value of these players changes with what team that they're on and where they go to.
Well, it's about what those teams need. And so Drew on Milwaukee was obviously very helpful for their defense, but they were lacking a dominant offensive ball handler. And Drew is not that. Dame is. And yeah, he's still one of the best offensive players in the league. Although I have gone on record as saying that he will tail off sooner than we think. Boston has dominant offensive ball handlers in Tatum and Brown. And to a lesser extent, you know, Derek White. Drew Holiday replaces Marcus Smart, who they were going to miss, and is, I believe, a better offensive player than Marcus Smart. And so then, as long as Porzingis is healthy, they have really the best, I would say, them and Milwaukee have the best starting fives in the league. Obviously, depth is going to be a concern for a couple of them, but I just find it, aside from the Sixers, most teams don't find it that hard to get, like, a seventh, eighth, ninth guy. And they have picks to do it. So I think that Boston is helped by Drew's, like, just regular competence and stability on both ends. And Milwaukee is, because they have Giannis and Lopez to, you know, make their defense tick. Although they will miss some point of attack defense, they will still be very good defensively, and they will probably have the best offense in the league. And Boston is just another, like, crazy switching, can kill you from anywhere type team, with a center in Porzingis who can stretch the floor, and they can, you know, spread him out, and also Horford if they, you know, want to throw different bodies at Embiid and whatever. So I think both teams as much as I do think Boston's going to miss Marcus Smart, and certainly would have missed him more had Drew not gotten there. And I think Milwaukee will, you know, there's just like gives and takes, right? But I think on the whole, both teams have netted out significantly better than they were at the beginning of the offseason. Especially, I mean, Milwaukee especially.
Boston, I think, is a little bit
closer because of the guys they miss, especially like Grant Williams and Marcus Smart. Drew is like relatively even and stuff. So I think Boston's a little bit better. I think Milwaukee's a lot better.
Can I present to you a theory about Milwaukee, though? I've been thinking about it.
Let's hear it.
So everybody, and I agree, it was the right trade for them to make. I think they're much better, yada, yada, yada. But what I keep hearing is the Dame Lillard Giannis pick and roll. The Dame Lillard Giannis pick and roll. The Dame Lillard Giannis pick and roll. Okay. In theory, yes, that's amazing. There is no... Guys as talented as Giannis do not like rolling to the rim over and over and over again. They just don't. It beats them up. Like, that's why players like Capella or, you know, Tyson Chandler back in the day that were not particularly skilled otherwise and really offensively just tasked with setting a screen and rolling to the rim and were playing defense otherwise, that was something. We watched last year Harden and Embiid, and the thing that made them deadly was Embiid's ability to sort of shoot from 15 to 17 feet, which Giannis is not particularly good at. I understand that during the playoffs, they will be able to run this play and it will be difficult to guard for sure. But I guess
because Giannis is a better finisher than Embiid.
Yes, for sure. As a role guy.
Yeah.
But that's all he offers in that action. Like, he's not a shooter. He's a good passer, of course. But yeah. I think the usefulness of that play is sort of being overstated a bit.
I don't disagree. I think the point about Giannis not wanting to screen 40 times a game is a good one. I think that he is good enough as a finisher that it doesn't really matter that he can't take a 15-footer the way Embiid does. They're just such different players. Mm-hmm. And so you're either going to have to have a big come out on Dame or let Dame, you know, fight over a Giannis screen really quickly. I think Brooke Lopez is also going to run a lot of screen and roll with Dame or pick and pop. And I think people are using maybe pick and roll as a shorthand where right. They can also be like dribble handoff type stuff. Just like actions with Dame and Giannis that a creative coach, and who knows, they have a new first time coach, can come up with, and they can work out a system where defenders are going to have to choose between, do I cover Dame or do I cover Giannis? And that either leaves one of them open, which is obviously deadly, or you're switching and you have the person that was covering Dame now covering Giannis, or vice versa. And both of those are a killer. So I hear what you're saying, but I think ultimately it's just different ways to get those guys, to get the defense to have to make that decision, that horrible decision.
Sure. Last voicemail, 833 Lickface.
Hey guys, this is Taylor from Fairmount. I feel like no one has made this point specifically, so I just want to say it. If James Harden wanted to play for the Los Angeles Clippers, he could have just accepted a minimum veteran contract and played for the Los Angeles Clippers. That's all he wanted. It was within his fucking grasp. He was a free agent. I don't know. Anyways, non-basketball question. What do you guys think about a wet bathroom handle? It's like almost certainly because someone washed their hands, but you don't know it. I'm very curious for your guys' thoughts on how to approach and handle. Second, I guess basketball question. What do you think it would take for Wells Fargo to sound even 1/10 like Citizens Bank Park right now during the playoffs? I just don't think Sixers fans have that in them. We're too nervous. We're too anxious. All right. Hope you guys have a good day. Bye.
So 3 points.
Yeah.
The first one, Harden wants his money. Like, he feels like he has given up too much money. So The idea of him declining a $36 million option and going, I'll just take two, seems far-fetched. And then he's out also, obviously, then once you've committed yourself as a minimum player, it is hard to break out of being a minimum player. You just sort of then go around taking minimum deals until you retire.
And so he's not handle.
Interested in that. Bathroom handle, very alarming. bathroom handle. Yeah. Always wet bathroom handle, tough. Sometimes I'll touch a wet bathroom handle and go back, wash my hands, and then use a paper towel to open the door. A lot of times I will touch it, feel it, and then make some sort of like sound like that, and then wipe my hands. Like a disgusted sound.
Okay.
Wipe my hand and try to never think about it again. That's tough. And the third one, Citizens Bank Park. Yeah, I mean, the Phillies, for the 10 years that they weren't in the playoffs, were not good for all of them. There were 5 years that they were very, five, six, whatever, years they were very bad. The last three or four, especially since they got Bryce, they were contending-ish, pushing for a playoff, and then they would fall off in September. And so the fan base had that cliff of, we keep dying at this same place every year. Does this sound familiar? And then once finally last year, they burst past that and made it to the other side of the cliff. They are now free from the burden of all that anxiety, of all that, this isn't going to work. They're going to do it again. We're nervous. We feel the first sign of like Nola getting into trouble. Oh fuck, here it goes again. Whatever. And now it's just like, there's just a feeling of real confidence in the team and in the guys. And obviously they're so likable and all that stuff. So I think for Wells Fargo Center to get to that level that Citizens Bank Park has been on, which they weren't always on. It wasn't like 10 years of greatness. It was a miserable 10 years. They will have to get past the second round.
That's it.
And once they get past the second round, if they steal a game in Boston, Milwaukee, or Miami, or wherever, then, and you go to game three of the Wells Fargo Center, tied 1-1 in the conference finals, it will be fucking electric. But we won't know that until they finally get past the conference finals, which, again, people, powers that be, might not think that it matters, but it does matter. The Phillies have not won a World Series in this iteration of the team, but there is a large amount of positive feelings towards them, despite the fact that they have not won a World Series, because they have been successful at a number of high levels and the feelings around the team are positive. And the fact that there is hope that they can win a World Series in the future, whether it's this year or years to come. The Sixers do not have that because they have not broken through in the same exact fucking place every time. And I guarantee it, and I think you agree, if they make it to the conference finals this year, we will all be happy. We will. We're not going to say, well, they didn't win a championship, so it doesn't matter. We will feel happy. If they lose 4-0 in the conference finals, then yes, I will be disheartened. But if they get past the fucking place that they've died at every time and make a good showing of it, then it will feel like, hey, that's positive momentum. That's a good year. My feelings towards the Sixers will drastically improve. And I believe everybody else's would as well. Do you agree?
I generally agree. One thing people should remember is that last season, like, attendance was not great last season. And then all of a sudden the playoffs happened and it got electric and people jumped on. I don't say this negatively. People like when you win big games and it makes them more excited. Yeah. And Philadelphia, I'm not saying that it's bandwagon, but I'm saying what happens is Philadelphia as a sports fan town can go from 0 to 60 very quickly.
Absolutely. It's a snowball of positive momentum. Yes. The cocky distraught meter. Like,
yes.
When it's a cocky, it's really cocky. And the Sixers one has not been a cocky since fucking retweet Armageddon.
Yes. It's been a really long time. And I can tell you, if the Phillies had made the playoffs for 6 straight years and yes. lost in the divisional round every
yep.
year,
yep.
There's something about this particular Phillies team, and I would love to study it, where they're expected to be good, but they don't really have the weight of expectations. Like, they're expected to be like pretty good. And when they're awesome, everybody's like, fuck, this is unbelievable. But there's something where they're not, nobody expects them to be favorites, which actually makes it a little bit more exciting.
Yeah.
But if it was five straight years of this or six straight years of this, trust me, you'd be complaining about the Phillies in the same exact way.
For sure. But the Phillies have won a championship in my lifetime, which obviously makes a difference. But and they also like each other. The fact that the Phillies players like being around each other and no one is calling out Dave Dombrowski for being a liar in a club.
Yeah.
That would factor in, I think.
Yeah.
To how much they like each other and like being around each other. And just another thing, like these Phillies teams in now 2 years in a row. Well, I guess not this year yet, but they're up 1-0 on the Braves. Last year, they beat good teams. They did not win a World Series, but they beat good teams in series. The Sixers have not beaten anyone that matters in 6 years.
If Joel Embiid had one playoff year, one, and this is coming from a guy who has shit on Bryce Harper being a phony for the entire time that he's been in Philadelphia.
He's awesome.
If he had one playoff.
I wish all guys were as phony as him. It would be great. If everyone was.
Can I finish? Yeah. If he had one playoffs, just one playoffs, like Bryce Harper had last year, he would be a hero in Philadelphia forever. Absolutely. The same way that Iverson is. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's all
Iverson had one.
One. That's what I'm saying. Because
Iverson had one.
Yes.
Where he, with the worst finals team of all time, stampeded their way through the East. Wouldn't have happened if Vince Carter's wing jumper had gone in at the buzzer. But they just winning and beating good teams does shit to that. Even though the Sixers only won one game from the Lakers and then lost pretty soundly in the next four. Like, that team is looked at fondly, and Iverson is looked at like a god because he did that. These Sixers have not done that. Beat someone. Please beat someone in the playoffs. I don't care that you finished top three seeds and you've had to play bad teams in the first round. I'd rather you finish the five seed or the seven seed and then beat a better team. Beat someone in the playoffs, and then people will hate you less. Simple as that.
That's it.
And simple as that.
Yep. All right. We will talk to you. We're going to start the pod at halftime on Wednesday night's preseason game. I think we play the Celtics again. So we're going to start at halftime. And we'll be live on YouTube. So subscribe or Twitch. So we'll talk to you then. Are you done with TTP?
Yeah. You know, lick face. Oh, wait. No. Don't pause it. I was going to say.
Yep.
Spike Eskin is a liar. That is my new sign off.
Okay.
And it's not the punishment. That's just something I'm going to say now. That is the new Okafor trade situation is until James Harden
gets... away?
What?
How does it go away? The Okafor trade... When Harden gets traded,
then they can cancel each other out.
Okay. So
but until then...
Are you done with TTP?
Spike Eskin is a liar.
There we go.